This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. I'm Mark Chappell and this is our investment commentary podcast from Legal & General Investment Management. Today we're going to be talking about one of the most exciting topics, now don't turn off, about fibre broadband and broadband infrastructure. So the race to provide faster broadband is on. Exponential growth in the demand for data and the number of devices connected to the internet will generate demand for ever faster and more reliable internet conditions. But the question is, how is the fibre broadband going to be laid and who's going to pay for it? Joining me today to answer these two crucial questions are co-head of credit research, Madeline King. Morning, Madeline.
Morning.
And infrastructure strategist, Maria Simpraga. Morning, Maria.
Morning.
So, guys, the UK fibre needs a lot of investment. The UK government wants more fibre broadband investment so everyone can have faster internet in the future. Where's it going to come from?
Well, the simple answer is, at the moment, we don't know. And this is why we think it's quite an interesting topic right now, because we think the sector is at a bit of a crossroads. So it can either come from my half of the investment universe, so the traditional telecom operators, so obviously BT is the main provider at the moment, or it could come from Maria's side of the world, and lots of alternative providers might actually be who's providing our fibre infrastructure in the future.
Alternative providers. Maria, could you talk about, blog that we've just published on the Future World blog, you call them these alt-nets, or can you explain that term and who are these new startups?
The alt-nets comes from alternative networks, and these are small companies that started off on a small local scale and through the process of ramping up managed more or less successfully to tap into various pools of capital that were available. And some of them have gone to cover hundreds of thousands of households at the moment. So some companies such as that may people may be more familiar with include CityFibre and Hyperoptic, for example. And these developers, some of them focus on new build development. Some of them will look at particular regions. Some of them will specialize in rural fibre rollout, and some will target more densely populated urban areas.
The question I guess I'm trying to get at is, how is this type of infrastructure historically carried out? Like, how is the broadband that we've got now, how was that put down?
So historically, everyone had a copper line into their house, and the entire UK telecom network was made of copper. And then it became clear that fibre was actually a much better way to deliver data to people's homes. And if you were building a network from scratch today in a country that didn't have anything, you would definitely lay fiber. It's by far the most efficient technology. But ripping up a copper network and starting from scratch is outrageously expensive and also very inefficient.
The amount of homes there are in the UK.
Exactly. So the approach that's been taken in the UK is to upgrade part of the network with copper, so what we call the backbone, and then certain other parts of the network. But the line that still comes into your house in most cases is still copper, so upgraded copper. And for now, that's fine. Most people in the UK have a pretty good broadband speed. Not everywhere, so there is a debate about people in rural areas not getting the speeds that they would like. But in general, The demand is being met in kind of most regions right now. But as usage increases, the number of devices per household, the level of technology involved in various applications gets more and more complex, and content becomes bigger, basically. Demand is just going to continue to grow, and the network that we have right now may not be fit for purpose. And so that's why we think the UK needs to do some investment, either from BT or from the altnets.
Maria, the UK can't be the only country. Like, everyone else is streaming things. Everyone else seems to have broadband or must be facing the same questions. What have other countries, other European countries, say? What have they done to meet this demand?
Yeah, so it really varies. I mean, some countries, sometimes it's the countries you wouldn't expect that have the best quality of internet. So places like some of the Baltic countries and Romania have really fast fiber internet. And And that's because they've sort of leapfrogged from very inefficient old copper infrastructure and gone on to full fiber immediately rather than doing any of the sort of intermediate steps that that were done in the places like UK. Some other countries like Spain and Portugal have rolled out full fiber as well. That did cost a significant amount of money. And one of the things that is interesting is that if you look at the uptake rates, at the moment, it really varies depending on where you look. Mm. And it can range from 30% in one country to sort of 60-70% in other countries. And in particular regions, it will also vary quite high. So if the quality of internet that you had before was really, really poor, you're more likely to pay perhaps double what you used to pay to get decent quality internet. But if you're...
The jump is so much higher.
Jump is so much higher in a place that had really dial-up type internet and moved on to fiber. But if you have sort of relatively decent internet and you're not sort of playing, I don't know, World of Warcraft or something like that, then you may not choose to spend the additional money to get that type of service.
I'm sure we all remember the horrible sounds that dial-up internet, connecting to dial-up internet, used to make. I mean, at least we've clearly moved on and have faster internet within that speed. But within the UK, I guess my confusion comes a lot from, as you say, there's this single supplier and likely comes from BT, and yet I get my internet from TalkTalk, say. How can you explain it? How can we understand the difference between, like, the retail consumer-facing companies that, you know, I pay Tesco or Virgin Media for my internet, or these kind of infrastructure, the fibre broadband layers, as it were?
So to think of the fibre or fiber-like line that's coming into your house, you may be getting it from TalkTalk or Sky or whoever, but in reality, that's probably also BT. So they're just reselling that product. So the only other real fiber provider, broadband provider in the UK is Virgin Media. So they have decent coverage, but not to the extent that BT does. And then these altnets are quite new. So the reality is, whatever the brand of broadband you're receiving, there's a very good chance it's BT, unless it's Virgin Media.
I imagine that means that there's not that much competition in the UK market. Have I understood that right?
That is right. And this... this is kind of the debate that's been kind of going on for years in the telecom sector. But the reason that TalkTalk and Sky and others are able to sell to you as a consumer is because of regulation. The government wanted to promote competition, but historically that hasn't been infrastructure competition. It's been you as an end consumer get lots of different broadband options and lots of different pricing plans, but all via BT's infrastructure.
But everyone's using the same wires, as it were.
And there's an argument that historically that hasn't promoted, it hasn't given BT any sort of incentive to invest. And that's kind of why we are lagging behind where we should be.
As the UK.
As the UK, yeah.
And yet that kind of lack of competition is exactly going back to what you were saying, Maria. There is room for these smaller players, these alt nets, as it were, in the UK market.
Exactly. So there are niches in the UK market where the demand for ultra-fast or hyper-fast broadband is there. And a lot of the times, these sort of the residential offerings will feed off of the a commercial or a local government demand. So, for example, you had fiber developments in York, where the company who was developing fiber, one of the altnets, built originally the large parts of the network to serve the local authority customer. And off the back of that network, they were able to say, well, right, we can expand this and offer residential broadband as well at a reasonable price. And the uptake they had was quite decent as well.
What they've done there is kind of made the argument to the local council, the local government, and said, you know, we can provide your broadband, we can lay the infrastructure, and then use that quite large local client to leverage that and say to the local area in Yorkshire, here, we've managed to do this successfully, we can do it quite cheaply, why don't you use us rather than other providers?
Exactly. So it was actually the local authority that really wanted to kind of have hyperfast network to serve the various premises that they had in the area. So it was sort of a synergy between the local authorities and the what can be done on the residential demand. Mm-hmm. And that potentially can be replicated in other places, particularly places that have sort of what you'd expect, so sort of favorable demographics in terms of the younger population, families, fairly affluent, not necessarily sort of upper quartiles.
People willing to pay a little bit more for faster broadband
exactly.
now rather than in the future.
Exactly. So people who are sort of open to or in need of a bit higher standard of broadband service.
And areas that have been left behind by BT, basically. There's a big argument that this is just parts of the country that BT should have covered a long time ago.
Exactly. So the fact that they haven't moved then allows the space for these alt nets now, is what we're saying.
Yeah,
exactly. Especially in rural areas as well, where coverage or the quality of coverage can be quite poor. Some of the alt nets, actually, many of them, specialise in rolling out fibre to the rural communities in particular.
Exactly, because I imagine for BT and Virgin Media at the moment, I've seen so much of them of their deployment being in kind of big city areas the roads outside my house were torn up by Virgin Media just 6 months ago to lay this fibre broadband. And I imagine they get a lot more bang for their buck in the city areas. But absolutely, that leaves the rural areas well behind and open for this kind of land grab, if that's a good way of putting it.
And it's also a big political issue because it's kind of one thing for people to be like, I've only got a 50 meg connection. But when it's people in properly rural areas with essentially dial up, there is a lot of frustration around that, and you get a lot of kind of local MPs up in arms about it. So it becomes quite a big political issue.
Precisely. If any company told me I'd have to go back to dial up, I would definitely be on the phone to my MP. I can tell you that much.
Well, actually, there's an interesting aspect here, and it kind of ties into the whole debate between sort of the public markets and the private real asset type markets. When we look at the investment cases for some of the fibre or broadband assets that we come across, we look for things like barriers to entry or how certain are we there's going to be demand for this broadband. And in rural areas, while it is more expensive to lay the networks down, the level of demand is much more predictable and barriers to entry will be much higher. So if you lay down a fibre network in central London, there is a reasonable case to make to say, well, you know, in 5 years' time, someone else could be able to do this more cheaply and compete against you. Whereas if you lay the fibre network down in a really remote rural area where you have a base of subscribers and you know what the uptake rates are, it is really unlikely that someone else will come and try to kind of compete in that area.
You've got these niche players with quite high barriers to entry at that point. Not everyone wants to dig up many, many miles of cable to reach these rural areas again and again and again.
So. Yeah, once they've been covered, nobody's going to do that in the future. The economics just doesn't work at all.
Precisely.
So yeah, if you get there first, you've essentially built a monopoly for yourself.
It's an incredible first mover advantage. Yeah. Absolutely. So really, this has taken us on to what the major implications for investors, both our clients and us as credit and real asset investors, that what you're looking for from a real asset sense is these high barriers to entry, this technological expertise that, you know, once they've laid the fibre broadband, it's going to be good for the next 10, 30 years. Am I right?
I think the useful life of the assets is around 20 years, but I think some companies have extended it to 30.
Wow.
So it depends what part of the asset you're talking about, whether it's the actual glass fibre threads, I call them, for want of a better word to describe them, or is it ducts or some of the kind of civil works around them? So it can vary from sort of 10, 15 up to 30 years, depending on what part of the asset structure we're talking about.
And for credit, what are you looking at from a research perspective in this area?
Well, there's two different angles. The first is BT's near monopoly in broadband going to be taken away by these alternative providers?
Yeah. At the moment, I mean, it's under threat.
So. It's under threat. At the moment, they're really small, but they've got really big plans. So if you add together all of the targets from all of these little companies, you get to a target of 25 million households passed, which is massive.
Yeah.
In reality, do I think they get to that number? Probably not. But it could still be a really big number. Mm. At the moment, it's fine, it's very manageable, but it could be that a huge chunk of BT's market share gets taken away. Alternatively, if they want to fight back against this, the obvious thing to do is really start investing in these underserved areas and upgrade the speeds that its customers provide. But that costs money.
Yeah.
So they do already have a rollout in place, but I think there's an argument that they really need to step up the pace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be expensive. And so we're going to need to fund it if it happens. Yeah. So either way, it's really important for credit investors.
Exactly. You're looking for BT to pull the trigger on that investment that's clearly necessary to fend off the large slice of its business it could lose if it chooses to not act.
Yeah, we'd much rather that they took the short-term pain of spending a lot of money now to ensure that their business is in the right position for the future. But so we think they're at a crossroads currently as a company. They've just appointed a new CEO. We've got a strategic update due in May. So we're hoping for a big strategy update at that point. And at that point, both myself as a credit person and Maria as an infrastructure person will have a much better idea of what the future of this sector will look like.
That's fascinating. Anything final to add from a real assets perspective, Maria?
Yeah, I think from the sort of looking at the alternates, it's clear that they're targeting some really ambitious numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the geographies they focus on, there's a lot of overlap. What seems reasonable to conclude from that is that there will be a degree of consolidation in the sector. So then what we may see, and this, again, depends a lot on what BT chooses to do, is consolidation of these small players into sort of a potential third competitor to BT and Virgin, who'd be able to kind of provide the network that delivers our broadband. And wherever there's M&A, there's need for M&A funding, so we will be there.
You can't have to create such a mid to large size competitor requires a lot of work and a lot of capital.
Exactly.
To create that kind of synergy across these companies. So if I've understood this right, it's really about the next set of results from BT to understand more about which path the UK takes for its rollout of the next kind of wave of fibre broadband infrastructure, both to fill the gaps where they've not got enough coverage and, you know, to make sure that they're set up for the demand of the future, for when we're all streaming Ultra HD 5 films at once across our household that requires so much more internet than we currently need, if I've got that right, guys.
Summed it up really well.
Oh, thank God for that, right, guys? Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read more about this amazing topic, Maria and Madeline have published a great blog on our Future World blog called UK Broadband Infrastructure at a Crossroads. The race to provide faster broadband is on. I really encourage you to read it. It's got some amazing charts and amazing research from these two great people. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our wonderful production team and our amazing producer, Holly McNulty, and look forward to seeing you again next week on Eldrum Talks. Thank you so much. Goodbye. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.